What's up, everyone? Have a fun podcast planned for you today. It's hard to believe that college football is back this weekend. We got Nebraska and Northwestern. Normally a game I wouldn't care to watch, but in week zero, I'll probably tune into that, especially with the drama around Scott Frost and Nebraska. So college football's back, and I'm going to bring on my BYU friends from many years ago, Dave Madsen, Jordan Smith, myself. We're going to discuss BYU football 2022, just kind of an overview of what we expect, what we're excited for, what we're concerned about. So we'll touch on BYU's defense. Can they rebound from a year ago and stay healthy? The quarterback situation, Jaren Hall, how good can he be? Who's the backup? Is it Jacob Conover? And give some season predictions as well. So it should be a lot of fun, a nice little appetizer to get you ready for the season next week. So hope you enjoy, and let's get right to it with myself, Dave Madsen, and Jordan Smith breaking down BYU in 2022. Oh, look at that.
Hello, what's hello, up? Hello.
The band is back together.
The man, the myth, the legend, Dave Madsen. What's up?
What's up, Jordan? How are you, man? Hey, Matt.
Doing good.
It's been, what, four long years? Last time we all got together to chalk it up, BYU, Zach Wilson was a freshman. Now he's injured and battling a...
battling a time with mom. So.
Oh, jeez.
30 seconds in, and we already got there. That was nice.
Did anyone else catch the clip of Ron Rivera singing the praises of Dax Milne and not get a laugh out of that?
No, I did not see that.
He called Ron Rivera the Redskins. I'll never be able to ditch the Redskins name. Yeah. The Commanders, excuse me. Sorry, don't cancel me over that, please. It was a mistake. He called Dax Milne one of the two best players on the team through preseason.
Wow, that is high praise.
Or is you have it a terrible roster? One of the two.
Fair point. Fair point.
I love Dax, but I mean, that's saying something.
That's fair. That's fair. They're probably going to finish last in that division. But we're not here to talk about Dax and Zach. We're here to talk about the 2022 BYU football team. Football's here, guys. It's right around the corner.
Oh, it's crazy. It's essentially game week.
It wouldn't be a conversation between us three if I didn't start things off on a negative note, right?
That's true. Yes. That's generally how we start.
What's your I'll turn it over to Jordan first, then Dave. What's your biggest concern about this year's team?
That I don't have a concern.
Oh, really? Wow.
And since I don't have a concern, I want to take my time right now to just remind the audience that 4 years ago, Matthew and I called you out saying that Kalani was great, trust the process. Give it some time, give some patience, and now we just beat Utah and we're in the Big 12. So you got to listen to me and Dave on this one, man.
It's true.
And that's all I have to say. I have no concerns. The roster's great. I love the coaching staff. I think we're having a good season.
Okay. All right, Dave, what do you have?
I tend to agree with Jordan a little bit. I still want to see the DL perform. I want to see some guys step up. We got Tyler Batty. It'll be good having Fawatea back.
He's been great in camp, yeah, by the way.
Yeah, and it's good to hear that he's fully healthy too. I mean, he's been a stud when he's been able to play. Dude has just been plagued by injuries, it feels like, the last year or two. And then what's the status on Atenaisa Mahe?
Here comes the first controversial take of the day.
Okay.
Everything Jordan said about Kalani is true. The patience paid off for Tom Homo, and he's built a great program. I think he's a player's first coach, and that's very attractive to everyone in the program, and I think it's helping with recruiting. From a fan slash media perspective, Kalani is not great when it comes to letting people inside the program, getting a feel for things or how things are. It's very like what's in the walls of the program is the way that it is. So to answer your question, no one knows. Like, there's no word on Atanasa Mahe. There's no word on Chaz Ayu. You don't know anything. You don't know about people's injuries. You don't know why people aren't on the roster. You don't know why people are missing. He will only comment, and some of the times he won't even comment if it's season ending. Like, we never found out what Neil Pau's injury was last year, ever. Even though it was season ending, we never found out. So, you know.
But to be fair, I mean, I wouldn't say that's necessarily a Kalani-specific issue. I mean,
it's a learned like a thing lot from Kyle Whittingham.
Well, that's true. But I feel like a lot of programs, you know, around the country are kind of shutting down or limiting access.
It's fair. More.
And so I don't necessarily think it's just a Kalani-specific thing. But
I never said it was. I'm just saying, to answer your question, you just don't get those bits of information. And you can argue one way or another if it's right or wrong, because there's been evidence to keeping it tight works. And there's also programs that just show it all. A lot of NFL teams just let fans in for the whole training camp. And that doesn't stop. That hasn't stopped the Chiefs from going to the Super Bowl. That hasn't stopped Kent. So I don't want this to sound like a criticism, even though it might. I'm just saying, well, you know, fans and media don't really have a lot of answers to a lot of these questions because Kalani chooses not to give those answers.
Fair enough. All right. Well, then back to the original question. So concern for me is just DL, just to see if there's some additional guys that'll step up. Sounds like Fisher Jackson, right? He's had a pretty good,
Pretty
good camp. It sounds like Gabe Summers is putting a lot of work, and it sounds like all the guys along the line are just bigger and stronger, which in particular, you know, I think of the Baylor game last year where, man, our D-line just got outclassed by their O-line. So I'm hoping to see I want to see just an improvement from the D-line kind of across the board. And then I'm a little concerned at free safety depth, like behind Malik Moore.
I
mean, who do we
have? Really? I'm not. So Hayden Livingston is the backup.
Okay. All right. I guess all right. Hayden's pretty good.
And behind him would be Matt Criddle.
Okay. Not as sold on Criddle. but
for a third string, he's very experienced.
I agreed. Yeah, that's true. Okay. That's a good point. That kind of alleviates.
Okay. I'm not. I would share your opinion if we were talking too deep here, you know, but we're not. You're too deep at safety. This was one of the few pieces of information that was divulged from camp is the safety spot will be Malik Moore and Ammon Hanneman. The backups are Micah Harper behind Hanneman and Hayden Livingston behind Malik Moore. I wouldn't say it's the strength, but it's definitely it's good enough to be a 10-win team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's interesting. Ammon beat out Mike. Obviously, Mike is coming back from injury. And then I know Talon Alfrey, right? Isn't he listed third string? And
yeah.
He was getting positive vibes, I guess, going into fall camp. So, what are your thoughts, I guess, Matt, on Ammon? Hanneman, I guess, taking over strong safety spot.
I'm excited to see what he can do. I thought last year he was a bit underwhelming. And then Elisa Tuiaki, he will be joining my actual sports show, Cougar Sports Saturday, this Saturday.
That hurts. I'm offended. I'm offended that we're not classifying this as an actual sports
show. But hey, this is
what the people want, man. They
yes,
want us three.
This is.
This is it's fun to talk. It's fun to talk in like a three person setting because it's just the back and forth. It's just different than a radio show, right? But he said that Ammon Hanneman has been probably the best surprise of camp defensively.
Really?
Yeah, so that's very good to hear. Now I want to see it because last year I just can't remember a lot of Ammon Hanneman moments where you were like, oh yeah, like this dude, you know, like because there's been a lot of safeties where you have had those moments. Sorensen, Kainakua, Andrew Rich, like we could go on and on and on. He didn't have any of those last year, but maybe this is the year. So hearing that from Elisa Tuiaki was got me excited for Ammon Hanneman because that was a concern for me going into camp. And when you get praise like that from Elisa Tuiaki, whether you love or hate BYU's defensive coordinator, he has had moments of having really solid defenses, and there's been some good safety play in the past under him as well. So I'm interested to see what Hanneman can do.
Yeah, same here. And for me, the fact that he beat out Mike Harper, who I really liked Mike. I thought he had some great moments as a freshman. I was bummed that he got hurt because he seemed like he was on a really good trajectory before then. But I think the fact that he beat out Mike, I think that says quite a bit. And then just tangentially, I don't know. I'm sure, Matt, you probably have some kind of a structure or format to this. But to your point on Tuiaki, I don't understand the hate. I don't mean to get us off on like a tangent here, but I think Tuiaki is just fine as a DC. Like, is he the best defensive coordinator ever? I mean, probably not. But I listened to his interview today on Sports Nation with Jerem Jordan, and I thought he gave some really good answers, to the questions. I mean, he owned up to the fact that in some of the games, like UAB and in the Virginia game, kind of before the halftime, that he should have made some more adjustments, and made earlier adjustments and didn't do enough to prepare, his players. And specifically UAB, he kind of talked about just getting the players ready from a mental standpoint, and how there was kind of this entitlement feeling that started top down about how maybe they felt like they deserved a bigger bowl game and some disappointment there and not getting one. And because of that, they didn't prepare the way they should have, for UAB, and that it started with him. So it was nice to see him, taking ownership of that. But besides that, I don't know. I mean, his performance on the field in general, I mean, we've had a decent defense. It's been top 50, top 60. Last year was a bit of an outlier. It dropped to, 71st or something, I think, in the country. But, I mean, in general, he's put out a solid defense the last few years, but the guy just gets raked across the coals by BYU fans.
You want to take that one, Jordan?
If you beat Utah, you're on my good list. Good. You got a couple years grace of me talking smack on Tuiaki. We saw improvements last year. There was adjustments. We got pressure on quarterbacks. The Baylor game.
Hold up a second. The pressure on quarterbacks thing is not accurate.
It improved last year. It was
under what metric?
Improvement. It was basement level years previous, and it got better last year. You don't have to do much when you're like one of the worst at it.
So they don't. They haven't had a player have more than 4 sacks in multiple seasons.
It's a team effort, Matt. All right.
Now, yes. Okay. Here's my thing on Tuiaki. I think the criticism actually has been warranted is too strong of a word, but I definitely can see why there's been a roar in the Cougar fandom towards him, just because I think first off, there was an expectation when he came here, fair or not, you're coming from Sac Lake City, right? He was a part of Sac Lake City with Kalani at Utah, and you thought that he was going to build up this tenacious defensive line and put pressure on the quarterback, and that just hasn't been the case at all during his tenure as BYU's defensive coordinator. And then on top of that, I think there has been an unwillingness for the majority of his career to be quick on the adjustment. Now, last year, I thought was, especially when he had a healthy defense, it looked like things were trending in the right direction, to Jordan's point. Like, there was improvement, there was adjustments, there was disguise, there was blitzing's another one, too. That's probably the most controversial element to his calling as a defense, is just didn't seem like for the past couple of years that he wanted to blitz. Now, I think that changed last year. And, you know, we'll have to see how he builds upon that. But I wouldn't go as far to say it was completely unwarranted, but it probably was over the top.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I can go both ways. Obviously, I think he can improve. I don't know. The interview again today that I saw with him, I thought was just really enlightening because, I mean, he talked a lot about personnel. And like you mentioned, Matt, I mean, when guys were healthy this last year, I mean, that Utah game, just thinking of that game, they didn't know where we were coming from. I mean, it felt like, and granted, I think it took a while, obviously, for Utah's O-line to kind of figure things out. I think they got better as the year went on. But I thought he called a masterful game there. Brewer was never comfortable.
Yep.
For the most part, I mean, we gave up a couple of big runs, which was mostly due to just missed tackles, I think.
Right.
If I remember right. Like, that game just – it was great. And that's – our defense just looked phenomenal that game. And he kind of alluded to that just with personnel and kind of, you know, losing guys. Like, he talked about, you know, playing corners and playing man defense and kind of the difference with that, right? And how, you know, they've got the guys now this year where you can play corners, where you put those guys out there. They're on an island. They don't have safety help at all. But we can feel comfortable with the guys that we have. And because of that, you know, you can do some other things into attack the run or attack the offense. Whereas, you know, in kind of years past, we haven't had that, you know. And so he's like, if you run that type of defense, you leave a DB on an island, they're just going to – who doesn't have great cover skills, let's say, and he's just going to get picked on by the opposing team. And then that DB is just not going to want to play DB anymore. He's going to want to change his position and things like that. And so, I don't know, it just was a good interview to kind of get some insight into, you know, what he's thinking. I didn't feel like he was using that as an excuse or a crutch, but just that, you know, it's important. I mean, things change. When you lose starters, when you go down to
– For like, sure.
To your third string or fourth string.
Yes.
You're not going to see
hold on, though. I agree, but I do find it interesting that this is an acceptable reasoning for Tuiaki, but it wasn't for Detmer in his final year.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's fair. Like, you got to have the same standard, you know, offense and defense. And Detmer, that.
You don't have the same standard.
Well, I don't. I'm just trying to defend Tuiaki. I wasn't talking about, you know, the offense or Detmer here. Like, I totally agree with you. I think Detmer kind of got thrown under the bus, you know, for 2017.
Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that. Like, I think he was definitely the scapegoat that year. I mean, we were running – was it the Utah State game that year where we had, like
– We were running Austin Kafensis at running back.
Yeah, running back. Was it Coy – no, who was – was it Coy Detmer?
It was Joe Critchlow.
Joe Critchlow. Oh, my gosh. I mean, we were – Yeah, that was really bad. That year was just really, really rough. Kind of, you know, trying to banish that year from my mind. But, no, I agree. I mean, you have to have that same standard. I totally think that Ty was a scapegoat that year. But, anyways, I'm just saying, I think Tuiaki, you know, kind of gets a bad rap from BYU fans.
He does.
Some of it, I think, may be deserved. But for the most part, I think he's solid. I think he's,
this will think be he's a big year for him.
Yeah,
because
no excuses this year. Yeah,
every single starting position is basically back. You could argue that Lopelea-Taua was a starter, and so if you want to play that card, then he has 10 of 11 guys back on the defense. The defense can't finish 72nd, or I don't have the number off the top. It was in the 70s total defense.
Yeah,
this has to be a top 40 defense if they're healthy, and because the schedule's harder this year, so they can't have – it can't be the offense having to score 30 points every game to win. That's just – it's not going to happen. Like, you'll be 8-4, 9-3 if that's the case. So this – I think it's set up nicely where this year is a perfect year for him to either silence the haters or maybe prove that some of that – criticism was warranted all these years.
I've been talking a lot again, Jordan. I feel like I need to let you speak.
No, I'm loving it, man. It's been a long time. I think we're all saying the same thing. Mistakes have been made. Adjustments weren't made.
Yep.
There were injuries, but again, you can still make adjustments when you have injuries. So last year, in my opinion, there was an improvement. Looking to see a more improvement this year.
Yep.
I'm excited for our defense. I take Jaren Hall's word when he says the best defense he's played against in fall camp was 5 years at BYU. So that makes me excited. You can go out there and say, yeah, the defense really well at fall camp. But to go out there and say, like, this is the best defense he's played against, I think that says something. So I think the defense is going to perform, and I'm excited to see what they have in store.
Did you guys see the this was posted today. We're recording this on Kobe Bryant Day. Can you guys – we're recording a pod on Kobe Bryant Day, and then a horrible piece of Lakers news just broke.
Yeah, Patrick Beverley.
I hate being a Lakers fan right now. I absolutely hate it. It's embarrassing.
That one seems interesting, right? They're giving up, what's his name, THT and Johnson for Beverly.
I don't give a rip about these two guys, but what really hurts is that they chose THT over Caruso, and then they dumped him for Pat Bev.
Dumping him? Yeah, that's fair.
Thank you, Rob Pelinka. Anyways, that's a conversation for another day. So today, 8:24, BYU football Twitter posted a mic'd up Jaren Hall. Did you guys see this yet?
I did see that, yeah.
I have not. Enlightened.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you – I don't know if you feel
– You guys. Major dental work happened today, all right? It's a miracle that I'm even here on the podcast, okay? I'm not on time for
major dental work? What are we talking about here?
Root canal, man. Terrible. All right. The fact that I'm speaking here is just, you know.
That is incredible.
Good point. That's why he's quiet, Dave. He's limping through.
Yeah, I feel better about talking so much. Yeah.
I don't know if you felt the same way that I did, Dave, but oh my goodness. I'm trying to think of the right expression. I wanted to crown him the greatest quarterback in the history of BYU football after that. Just his throws, his command. He was just – it was outstanding. Man, am I right?
You've been wanting to do that since he lost against USF, you know.
Oh, now you know that wasn't his fault.
I'm just kidding. I know. I'm with you, man. I just listened to him. I was like, dude, this guy is just a natural leader. I loved his constant talking. I loved – you know, there was one where he threw a touchdown. I can't remember who it was to.
It was Braden Cosper. Thing of beauty. Oh.
Yeah, I think it was Cosper. And as he's running up to, like, celebrate with him, he, like, pats – one of the DBs or safeties on the helmet and said, hey, like, good luck, you know, like, good D kind of thing. Like, it was cool to see, obviously, you know, in fall camp, it's kind of, you know, offense versus defense, right? Us against them. But it was cool to see that, you know, he's propping guys up on both sides of the ball. I mean,
I don't care about that. I could care less about his complimenting of the defense. What I care about is, one, I just thought, it felt very like NFL like. It was just like in and out of plays. We got to, you know, it was just like
very business like. Yeah.
Very. Yep. And then I don't know if you've noticed this, but to me, it like clicked today. Jordan, you'll have to watch this afterwards and we'll talk another time. Today, it clicked for me that his work with John Beck is paying off and it is obvious in the way that he is throwing the football. When John Beck came to BYU, he was like really strong armed. There wasn't a lot of touch in his first couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then by the end, it was just like a flick of the wrist all the time. Yeah. Just a little air here. That's what Jaren Hall was. It was just like, and every pass, granted, look, I understand that these clips that come out, they are edited to show the best parts. They want to portray a certain image. They're not going to show us the worst throws. But every single throw that they showed us was right on the money. It was like it had the appropriate amount of zip. It hit players right in the spot where they could continue their stride and get some yards up. I don't know. It seems like he has taken an enormous stride with his accuracy. And, man, if he can throw the football like this against some of these good opponents, like BYU's going to have a good season. He looks like he is one of the best quarterbacks in college football. I might be overreacting here, but I don't know how else to react to these clips. They are insane.
Well, I didn't notice any of that, Matt. I just noticed lame stuff like him propping up his defense. So, you know.
You're right. Jordan, quick, go and watch this immediately.
I will.
I agree. He looked
in the second coming of Ty Detmer here, I guess. So.
Ty didn't throw the ball as good as he did in that clip. Ty threw the ball. Okay, Ty was probably the best.
Ivan Trophy winner Ty Detmer didn't throw the ball as good as Jordan.
Hold on. Oh, my gosh. Let me finish. My goodness.
It starts sounding like me with Zach Wilson here, Matt. Oh, my goodness.
Ty Detmer is the greatest quarterback to play at BYU. There's no disputing that. But if you go watch those clips, there were a lot of wobbly passes. That's all I'm saying. The passes in this clip were tight, spirals. That's what I'm saying.
First, Kalani throws Ty under the bus. Now, Matt Biamonte throws him under the bus.
I will never throw Ty under the bus. He was wrongfully fired in 2017.
Those wobbly passes, that's what I'm talking about. You're throwing his career under the bus.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. I go ahead, Jordan.
Point being, our offense should be good. I have a lot
good. If they're good, then it's a failure.
They should be solid.
Solid? Jordan, come on here. Don't downplay this. They were 17th in the country last year, and they bring back everybody but Algier, and they replace him with someone who looks like Algier. I mean, the way that he runs the football is like Tyler Algier. They have to be top 20. Anything other than top 20 is unacceptable with this much talent. Go ahead. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to interject here. Jordan, is this really Matt Biamonte? Like, the guy who, after Zach Wilson threw for like 5,000 yards, is like, Zach Wilson sucks.
5,000 yards?
Jaren Hall. Like,
Zach Wilson wasn't very good in 2018, and I'll stand by that.
And now we got Matt's like, what? Jaren Hall solid. Like, if the offense is good, it's a disappointment. They're going to be the best offense in the country.
They're not going to be the best offense in the country, but come on, guys.
Matt
come
has
on.
A special place in his heart for Jaren Hall since he was in high school. So, you know what? I'm happy
since
for Matt.
I was in high school?
No, since Jaren was in high school.
I'm just kidding.
I'm excited for the season.
Yeah, go for it, Jordan. Sorry.
No, I said, I'm excited for the season. I'm expecting a really good record.
I am too. And for the record, I think our offense should be really good. Really good. I mean, I know we're going to be playing some tough teams that should have some good defenses. Notre Dame, you know, I think should be tough in that respect. Baylor, we'll see. I mean, last year was interesting. I mean, Baylor felt like we were just throwing all over them, even though they had some NFL quality DBs. That was kind of Puka Nacua's coming out party. But, I mean, I have to
listen to this.
That.
Listen to this. Be good. Take the names off the table. Since Jordan seems to here to have some beef with Jaren Hall, that makes no sense. Let's take the names off the table.
I love Jaren Hall. I just don't love him as much as you do.
It doesn't make sense. I don't know. I don't know what you can criticize. You just talked about a guy. You want to give Tuiaki a 10-year extension for beating Utah and get it was Jaren Hall who did it.
It's a team effort, Matt. It's a team effort.
Okay. Names aside, if I were to tell you guys, because these are all facts, right? You have an offensive line that will probably have three on the low end and five on the high end guys drafted in the NFL. If you have a tight end pair that, you know, one of those dudes was a freshman All-American. And the other guy in spring was referred to as his offensive coordinator as being one of the best players on the team. That's your tight end tandem. Your running backs are two experienced dudes, one of which has over 20 career touchdowns. And the guy you bring in is a Power 5 running back who turned down Notre Dame. And then you have a receiver who comes back who is on the verge of being a top 10 receiver statistically. And then the guy opposite him, people are saying is the most talented wide receiver to have ever played at BYU. And then your quarterback is someone who ended the streak, is being talked about as a first round draft pick. And how is anything less than top 15 offense with that resume? Anything less than that is unacceptable, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
well, Jordan just said here, if they're solid, it's good enough. I'm saying no. The expectation here is they have to be top 15. With this, the stars have never aligned like this for BYU's offense. It has to be better than last year. And they were 17th last year. And they, I think they will be better, though. That's the thing. That I set all this up, but I believe that this offense is just going to be outstanding.
Yeah, I think they will, too. I agree with that. It's kind of hard to argue against that.
I saw a really cool stat right before this. You guys know that BYU is 26-6 since Aaron Roderick took over play calling?
Amazing.
Oh, wow. That is incredible.
I too, have faith in the offense. I'm just downplaying the love affair over here. But, no, I'm excited, too. They should be a top 15.
How does it make you feel to know that that guy who put up 26-6 said that he wouldn't trade Jaren Hall for any quarterback in the country, Jordan?
I love it, but also if he said he would, that would be pretty messed up and he might get fired. You know, I mean, that's, you can't.
No, you're Jordan is the master of taking something and twisting it out of reality.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, what's he going to say? He's like, yeah, Jared's all right, but, you know, give me Bryce Young. I'd rather have him on the team. Like, I mean, like, Aaron's not going to say that.
Of course he's not going to say that. But if you go and listen to the quote, a typical coach speak, I think when talking about a quarterback that you really like would be, he's great. We believe in him. He's a leader. You know, it's like Aaron went out of his way to add this extra layer to Hall that most coaches don't. It's not every, there's not 50 coaches in college football who are saying, I wouldn't trade this guy for anybody in the country. Blake Anderson at Utah State's not saying that about his guy.
That's a fair point.
We all love Jaren.
Arizona is not saying that about Jaden DeLora, the transfer. I wouldn't trade him for anybody in the world.
We all love Jaren Hall, Matt.
We do. I think Jaren's incredible.
Nobody loves him more than me. And don't let Jordan or Dave convince you otherwise.
All right, so what is your expectation then for Jaren, like stats-wise? I mean, is this a 4,000-yard passing?
No. It's not. It's not a 4,000. They're balanced. They're too balanced.
True. Yeah.
I would say maybe like 80% of what Zach did in 2020 would be fair, like over 3,000 yards, probably not like 30-something touchdowns to three picks. But I'd say 25 TDs, 3,000 yards. We give him another 5 TDs on the ground, so 30 total touchdowns and less than 5 picks with a completion percentage of high 60s. That's what I think what you'll get from Jaren.
That'd be a great year.
Great year.
That would be fantastic. Is there even the remotest possibility of Jaren coming back?
No, none. Zip. No. The only way that happens is if, and knock on wood, this doesn't happen, is if a Taysom 2015 thing happens.
Gotcha. Gets hurt in like that.
If he even plays 7 games, but looks great in the 7 games, and there's just some fluky cheap shot that knocks him out for the other 5, he's gone because he'll get drafted. I think. The thing about Jaren, too, from his NFL perspective, is he's got that dual threat ability that is so coveted. And I think his stock is just going to rise once he, starts to interview with people, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's no chance I think he comes back. He looks good. I mean, if he performs anywhere close to, like, what you expect from him this year, you're right. Like, he's gone. Out,
if he plays 10 games and puts up the numbers I put down, I think he will be the third quarterback taken in the NFL draft.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's coming in hot.
It's not that hot. That's not that someone, I can't remember the writer on ESPN, had him number 9 to the Seahawks.
Wow.
You know, in a mock draft like a couple of weeks ago. So I'm not the only person on planet Earth blowing smoke up people's butts here. All right.
All right. Fair enough. Question then, keeping on the quarterbacks, what are your thoughts on Jacob Conover and then Cade Finnegan?
Jordan, do you want to chime in or do you want me to go first and then you can react?
I mean, you have seen a lot more of these players than I have. The little I have seen, Conover looks great. I mean, if we're going to have a backup for Jaron, who has had a couple of fluke injuries here and there, I'm happy to have Conover behind him.
Conover has taken a huge step forward this fall camp. Huge. At the end of spring, I was not sold that he was going to be the next guy. But now I feel comfortable with him as the backup. It's just really hard, I think, for Conover to, like, I know you guys did a jump all over my butt here, but I'm going to say it anyways. In 2019, when you went from Wilson to Hall, their skill sets were so similar. They could, like, do most of the same stuff. You really didn't have to, like, change anything. Conover cannot do almost anything that Hall can do. Like, he's not as athletic. He doesn't have as strong of an arm, and he's not as accurate. So I think you would have to change the way that you call a game. But he's now in the system for 3 years. I think he's developing some confidence. He's had a great fall camp, so I feel much better about Jacob Conover being the backup. But I don't feel great about it either. Like, I still need to see more. I feel like if Hall went down, the season is done. Like, I just...
Wow.
That might be unfair. I just feel like Conover is not ready for that. I think best case scenario, Conover plays in 2 or 3 games. You know, like, he gets most of the Utah Tech game and maybe some mop-up duty against Wyoming or something. And then next year, you're like, okay. Kind of like what Hall did, right? Because Hall, sure, like, was in the program for 3 years before he had to go. So, I'm optimistic about Conover, but I'm not ready to say I'm, like, comfortable for him coming in and taking control of the team. And Finnegan, I was kind of high on Finnegan when he transferred.
Yeah.
And then in spring he was hurt, and then he has not looked good in fall camp. Like,
really?
He's been making some poor decisions. The accuracy was off. He threw a pass last week, like, right to Caleb Hayes, who just, like, took it back for a pick six. And you're like, what were you looking at?
Yeah.
This is camp. Like, this isn't even this isn't even real football, for heaven's sakes. So, Finnegan has a ways to go. I think BYU's quarterback position, it's going to be interesting to see what they do if Hall leaves early. Like, do they go into the portal to add some depth? It's going to be interesting. It's a big year for Conover. I hope he gets some opportunities to show us that the recruiting rankings and the talent. But I'm having a hard time still shaking last year out of my mind. But at the same time, also understanding, like, this fall camp, he's a totally different player than he was last year, and he's much better. But I just don't know if this has been years of the. I'm rambling now, so I'm about to stop. But there's been past years where you felt like the backup QB, like, we're good, you know. Mm-hmm. Baylor Romney last year, right? I think with Baylor, you're like, hey, no problem. Yeah, can he do the same stuff as Hall? No, not exactly, but it's all good. Like, he can get the job done. I don't know if we're quite there yet with Jacob Conover, but we're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, so a couple things that you said I thought were interesting. First, on Conover, I mean, if I remember, he came out of high school. He's like a pure pocket passer, right? I mean, he's not a threat to run.
No.
So it's interesting, though. Like, so you still feel like arm strength and arm-wise, though, Jaron's got the better arm. Because I remember, Jaron coming in was – he was kind of more like a dual threat, maybe not as good of an arm, but, you know, he had the athleticism and the wheels, and it sounds like he's just developed. His arm is just fantastic now. And obviously we saw that last year too. I mean, he does have good arm strength. I'm surprised that it's that Jacob's not necessarily at the level that Jaron is from an arm strength standpoint, because I thought that was kind of his big strength coming in. The other note, this is going to be kind of blasphemous.
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
I like Baylor Romney. I did not think he was, like, the world's greatest backup quarterback, like I think most BYU fans tend to think of him as. I think he was great. You know, he came in, he did some really good things.
You don't you think know. He's great because you're about to disparage him.
I'm not trying to disparage him. I mean, there's, you know, he was solid, I think, for what he did. I just, like, I look at the Boise State game, right, where a lot of people talk about that game, you know, it was coming out game where, you know, third-string quarterback comes in. We have no business necessarily beating Boise State, you know.
2019.
Yeah, sorry, 2019. In 2019, so a couple years ago. And I just was rewatching that game the other day, and, like, he's fine, but he looked like a backup quarterback, and we had two great, you know, kind of trick plays, the fourth down play and then the trick play to Bushman, these two touchdowns that kind of gave us the separation that we needed. Great play calls. He executed them well. But, like, and then, you know, he didn't lose us the game, right? I kind of look at Jacob. Sorry, no.
He did not lose us the game. That he actually won the game. I just wanted to set the record straight.
Hear me out here, though. Okay, like Jacob Conover, he comes in against Utah State, you know, and people were kind of dog on him for his performance in that game. Obviously, unlike Baylor, he's coming in that game cold. You know, Jaron leaves, you know, partway through that game, and so he has to come in and finish things out. He's like 5 out of 9 for, you know, 40, 50 yards. Doesn't obviously win us the game. I mean, we won the game on the legs of Tyler Allgeier there, but doesn't lose us the game. And it felt very much like a Baylor Romney against Boise State type of performance. And then let's not forget, like,
no, they're not, like, even close. To the same.
Hold on. Let's not forget too, like,
Jordan, put an end to this.
Okay, hold on. Let's not forget too, Baylor comes out and just goes ahead and loses to UAB last year as well, right? Like, it's not like he lit the world.
You're gonna put that on Baylor. You're gonna put that on Baylor. You're gonna put. You're gonna. The defense had multiple opportunities at the end of the game to hold UAB out of the end zone, and we're gonna blame Baylor Romney for that. All right.
I'm just saying. You know, 28 points against UAB. You know, I'm just saying the blame can go either way.
28 points is more than the magical number Bronco had on the wall for how many points you needed to win.
I'm just thinking, I'm looking for, like, a Zach Wilson putting up, like, 49 on Western Michigan. Like, that's what I'm expecting to happen against UAB with Puka and Gunner out there. I'm not expecting this – and Tyler in the backfield who played in that game. Like, I'm not expecting 28 points on those guys.
Okay.
I mean – anyways, I'm sorry. I'm not totally. I like
you. Baylor. Jump in, Jordan. Then I need to. I need to change the comparison. But you go first, Jordan.
I think the biggest difference for me those two is they let Baylor go out there and just sling it. And Conover, you could tell that they were scared to let him actually, like, go out and win the game. It was, everything was safe. Everything was, like, very simple reads. Baylor, they had trick plays ready for him. He chucked the ball down the field. They had confidence that he could win that game.
He was a starter, though. Like, he was going, he had a week to prepare.
Hold
for
on.
Game.
No. Okay. I need to, if we're going to make this comparison, the true comparison would be Baylor Romney coming in halfway through against USF in 2019, not having a week to prepare as a starter, but getting thrown in. Baylor Romney moved the ball well against USF, and they just couldn't cash in the red zone at the end of that game to beat USF. Like, Jacob Conover was not moving the ball up and down the field. And to Jordan's point, I think this is telling, why were they more comfortable with Baylor and opening up and not with Jacob? I think that is a fair question to ask. And because Jacob, to me, in the Utah State game just did not look ready. It's like he had no expectation of playing, and it was like, oh my gosh, put on the helmet, and I'm, you know, I just, but that was a year ago. I think he's a totally different quarterback now, but, you know, I definitely think the coaches at that period of time had more faith in Baylor Romney than they did at Jacob Conover in those moments.
Yeah, that's fair.
Jordan, jump in now, please.
I think he's accepted your answer. I think we're good. I think I'm right in between you guys. I like Conover more than Matt does. I like Baylor more than Dave does. So I'm kind of right in the middle of you two right now. But I think Baylor was a great backup quarterback, and we needed someone like that because, unfortunately, Hall does have a history of little nagging injuries. So
yep,
there's a good chance that Conover's going to see some snaps, whether it's because of a blowout or because of a blindside hit or something, or a twisted ankle. So hopefully this fall camp has helped him get ready for that.
Yeah, and for the record, I would rather have Baylor Romney right now as our backup quarterback than Jacob Conover.
Okay, thank you. That's
just for the record. All I was saying was I just don't hold Romney on this like pedestal. That I feel like a lot of BYU fans hold him. I think he was good, and this is just probably super unfair on my part. I think we tend to remember some of the, you know, like him coming in, the great, you know, the Boise State win was awesome, beating ASU, you know, coming in for Hall and throwing the pass to Rex last year, kind of those heroics, and obviously like dominating against Utah State, you know, the following week before he got knocked out. I mean, he had great performances. I don't know. For some reason, there's just some things. I guess just rewatching that Boise State game, I was like, I mean, he's good, but he's not like, I don't know. I just didn't feel like he was on this pedestal like all these BYU fans put him on. Anyways, okay. I know it's blasphemous. That's all I was saying.
It is. All right. We could probably go for another little bit. So we all get one opportunity to drop one more piece of whatever we want to discuss, and that's going to wrap up this. But we're going to keep doing this. So my last thing I want to say is to touch on something Jordan said about Hall's injuries. I thought one of the best comments of all fall camp was when Hall was asked about the injuries and he was like, oh, I put on some weight, which I always hate hearing that, where it's like, yeah, like an extra 10 pounds of muscle is really gonna do it. But what I thought he said was so, I don't know if mature is the right word, but I just felt like he's coming at the right way. Where he was like, the only way I'm going to stay healthy is if I have a better IQ of the game. Like if I'm getting the ball out faster, if I'm like recognizing defensive situations where I can get out of harm's way. I just thought that was a really good sign about maybe some work that he's done in the film room and maybe work that he's done with John Beck, where it's not about being bigger, faster, stronger. You know, like you think about some of the quarterbacks who have stayed healthy for so long, Tom Brady being one of them, is he just doesn't take hits. Like he's reading the D and he's getting the ball out and changing plays. So if Hall can put that into practice, then I think he has a really great chance of playing a full season of football, because he's not going to take that many hits. If he has a good offensive line, and then in those situations, he's actually recognizing, I need to dump it out on the flat, I need to change the play, you know, whatever it may be. I thought that was a very interesting comment from him, and it got me excited. It's not the right word, but I felt like more comfortable saying, I think he's going to play a full season if that's the mindset he's going to have.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's a great point. I think a lot of athletes and players focus so much on the physical part of the game to stay healthy, but you know, mentally,
it's the mental, yep. Yeah,
for sure.
Jordan, what do you want to throw out there to the world?
My prediction for the season. Can I give you that?
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that. Yeah.
I'm gonna throw out 11-1.
Woo-hoo-hoo! So whoa! I need to ask this. Hello, coming in hot. Who's the loss, and is that good enough to get them into the only at-large New Year's Six spot?
Based off of the history of the committee, I'm going to say no.
That's a joke.
They just don't, but they just don't allow non-Power Five, which I mean, next year we'll be able to enjoy that. But I think that we lose to either Baylor or Arkansas.
You have us beating Notre Dame.
I think,
and Oregon.
I think Oregon should be a two-score win. We're going to be more physical. Wow. Cristobal's gone. I don't think Oregon deals well with teams like BYU, and as long as we're healthy in that game, I think that'll be a comfortable win. And the same thing with Notre Dame. Notre Dame is always overhyped preseason. Their ranking is way too high. They lost their coach, who I think is one of the best coaches in college football. I think we're gonna win that game. Arkansas or Baylor are the games that I worry more about.
Wow,
11-1, book it.
Dave, before you get to your, is there anything you want to add before you give us your prediction?
I liked what you said about Jaron, Matt. I think that's a great point. The mental side of the game, and Tom Brady, and that's a great example. He just doesn't get hit,
yep.
just like you said. And so that's a great point. I liked what you and Mitch talked about. I think it was in Cougar Sports Saturday. Maybe it was one of your scrimmage recaps, but I think it was Cougar Sports Saturday, where just about the offensive line and how, you know, Clunes talked about going potentially eight or nine deep at that offensive line. And how I think you guys were talking about or kind of came to the consensus that you don't necessarily like that. Like, you want a solid five, right, to go.
Yep.
But how there's this nice luxury where if you put a guy in who isn't performing or isn't doing well, like, you can just swap him out and put another guy in who could be just as good, you know. And that's such a great and amazing luxury to have. So I think those two things combined, you're right. I mean, I feel pretty comfortable that Jaron's going to make it through the season relatively unscathed, right? Just his mental, you know, grasp of the game sounds like it's better, and he's got a great O-line in front of him with a lot of good depth there too. So, yeah, I'm excited to see that. My prediction on the season, man. Oh. I mean, I said, you know, Lavelle always said every year, like, we stay healthy, I think we have a pretty good chance, or, you know, we have a chance of being a pretty good football team. Like, I kind of echo that. Man, 11-1, I just – looking at that schedule – I mean, I think we're going to be good. I think we got a chance to go and run the table. I mean, this is me we're talking about, right? Like, I'm always the 14-0 national champs, you know.
Hope springs eternal.
Hope springs eternal, baby. And I'm going to say that till I die. But I think every team, like, regardless of who you are, you know, even if you're the Bamas or the Ohio States or the LSUs, you need some lucky bounces too to go your way to go undefeated.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are, and so obviously, I think if everything falls the right way, I do think we have a team that could potentially run the table this year. That said, with all the different unknowns and stuff, I'm going to go with 10-2. I'm going to say 10-2. I'm not sure who the losses are. I feel like Notre Dame and Vegas. I know they're generally overrated. I know they're getting a new coach in, but I still feel like they've got a lot of talent there, and that's going to be a tough – I think that one's going to be tough. And, boy, I don't know. I mean, Arkansas maybe as well. I think Baylor's the big litmus test for this.
Yes, team. Totally.
That's going to tell us a lot. You know, if our defense can hold up to that O-line and if we can somehow – if we can take down Baylor, I think we got a good chance at running the table. But, yeah, I'll go 10-2.
I'll go. I hate these predictions because just so many things can go wrong. But I think 11-1 is what I would say right now.
Wow.
There's just too much returning talent. Too much. And we've talked about this on my show before, but when you really break down every individual game, we don't have the time to do that. You can make a case for all of them. It's like Baylor's at home and they lost some guys. Oregon, Jordan already touched on them. Notre Dame, new coach, new quarterback, really no skill players. Their best running back went to the league. Their wide receiver group is not very deep and their best one got hurt. Arkansas is the real unknown because it's nice that that's at home. And teams like Arkansas don't make this trip very much, and SEC teams have struggled making that trip to Provo. But with that being said, I don't know. They're really talented. They have a good. They might have the best quarterback on BYU's schedule. So that one's tough. And then there's always just games that BYU seems to not show up for. So, but 11-1 is where I'm going to go. And it all depends on health. I mean, that's probably something we don't talk about enough, is how you need health to go your way if you're going to have a special year. But they have the top-end talent, and I think they have enough depth. But there's certain positions that they can't afford big injuries. A quarterback, wide receiver, I think, is another one. But I'm going to sneak in an honorable mention commentary on my way out. Brad Cosper has had a sneaky good camp. I think he's going to play a lot more than we think.
Yeah, I've been seeing that. I mean, it seems like he's kind of been all over.
He's
the place,
in the mix.
Right?
Let's put it that way. He's definitely in the mix. So,
do you think he's in the mix then? Because it seems like Keanu Hill is is pretty solid at number three with his experience.
No. That's not accurate at all to say that he's solid at number three. I think he's going to be given the first crack at number three, but he's going to have to produce. And it's been – he's at a good camp, but he's at drops. So I would not say Keanu Hill is number three by any stretch of the imagination. He's number three in terms of he'll get the first chance, but he's got to produce. He's got to produce to keep Chase Roberts and Braden Cosper off the field.
Interesting. So, and would you put the edge then on Cosper over Roberts right now?
Oh man, that's a great question. I would say, I kind of feel a week ago I would have said yes. Now I think it might be dead even between those two. It's going to come down to who produces in the games. The number three wide receiver spot, it's not going to be determined for a few games. We're going to have to see how that plays out in actual games before someone, I think, solidifies a permanent role.
That's pretty exciting, too, to think about. I mean, it feels like wide receiver, there's a good pipeline going on there that Fessy Satake's
got. Oh, yeah. On, so. He's the man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting, man. I just – BYU football, I mean, golly. Like, last time we did this, right, we talked about 2018.
I wanted to die last time we were doing this. I was in the depths of despair.
Coming off the worst year ever, it feels like, in BYU history. That year was terrible. And now, fast forward 4 years down the line.
I will never forget – these pods never seem to end, so I'm sorry. Me and Jordan are waking up in like 7 hours to work out, so we're really pushing through.
Good for you guys.
Thanks, Dave. I'll never forget in 2017 when we went to that fall camp practice, and we were like, this is really bad, but it's all right. It's going to be fine.
Hope springs eternal.
Yeah, that was then we realized, nope, we're not good. And it started with Portland State, where it was like, what, 20-3 or to 6? Yep. And then the infamous LSU game. Oh, goal. Yeah. Well, this has been awesome, guys.
This has been great.
Get the band back together.
It won't be the last time. I can assure you that when Jaren Hall throws for 500 yards in a game, I'll be dialing you guys up immediately.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, aren't we supposed to have like a pod before each game so we can put out a score prediction?
Yes, let's do it. I'm committed this year.
We got to give our fans content, guys.
You're right. We got to crank it out, the content machine. All right, let's go to bed. You guys are it's late here on Kobe Bryant Day, so we'll end on that note. But we'll touch next week a little more South Florida preview.
Let's do it.
That's great.
Thanks, all right, guys.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.